So Genesis 40, verse 1. Sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offence against their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them. They continued for some time in custody. And one night they both dreamed, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, each his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. And so he asked Pharaoh's officers, who were with him in custody in the master's house, "Why are your faces downcast today?" They said to him, "We have had dreams, and there is no one to interpret them." And Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me." So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, "In my dream there was a vine before me, and on the vine there were three branches. As soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth and the clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand." Then Joseph said to him, "This is its interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly, when you were his cupbearer. Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into this pit." When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable, he said to Joseph, "I had a dream. I also had a dream. There were 3 cake baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head." And Joseph answered and said, "This is its interpretation. The 3 baskets are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you. On the 3rd day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him." So we come to faithfulness in the pit. That's what I've called the sermon this morning. Faithfulness in the pit. You may remember back in chapter 37, Joseph was put into a pit by his brothers. The pit then was a literal pit, a cistern, a well of some sort that he was put in, and they had the idea that they would leave him. And then eventually, if you remember, they decided to sell him to some passing traders. And he went down to, taken down to Egypt. And the setting here in chapter 40 is a prison. At the end of the previous chapter, you'll see that Joseph ends up in the prison because of what he's accused of doing with Potiphar's wife. Of course, it was a lie. She was making it up because he resisted her advances. And she claimed that actually he had been trying to advance towards her. And so Potiphar put Joseph in prison. It's interesting later on that this prison, in fact, if you just want to glance over to chapter 41 and verse 14, so in the next chapter, Pharaoh sent and called Joseph. He wants his dream interpreted as well. And it says, they quickly brought him out of the pit. So he was referring to the prison as a pit. Indeed, in the chapter we read, chapter 40 and verse 15, it talks about being put into a pit by Potiphar and his wife. So he was innocent, but he was dumped into a pit by his brothers. He didn't do anything wrong. He was innocent, but he was dumped into a pit by Potiphar. And I wonder this morning whether you can identify with that feeling of being in a pit at all. Probably not a literal pit. I guess you wouldn't be here if you were in a pit somewhere. But some kind of metaphorical pit. Feeling trapped. Feeling like the walls are closing in and there's so little you can do. Are there any ways that you feel a bit like you're in a pit? Perhaps it's no fault of your own. And I'm not talking here about necessarily sins that have got us into a pit, because that can happen as well. I'm just thinking about perhaps things that have happened in our lives. I don't know, perhaps the job that you're in feels like you're in a pit. Perhaps the role that you have, perhaps as a mum, sometimes feels like you're trapped. Perhaps your marriage even sometimes feels like a pit, you're trapped. Perhaps as children you might feel like you're trapped because you're the youngest, or you're trapped because you're the eldest and everyone expects so much from you, or you're trapped because you're in the middle and you're neither the oldest or the youngest. Perhaps you feel trapped because you live here in Loftus or wherever you live. Perhaps you feel trapped because you're unemployed and you can't see a way out of unemployment. Perhaps you feel trapped because you've got a mortgage around your neck and you're thinking, oh no, when am I ever going to get this debt out off my shoulders? Or perhaps you feel in a bit of a pit because something to do with your health, either your mental health or your physical health, is making you feel like you're trapped and can't get out. Perhaps you feel trapped while you're waiting for a husband or a wife to appear. Some people even feel trapped by their wealth, or by their reputation, or by some other circumstances of life. And so in a very real sense, we can feel like we're in a pit. Some of you perhaps will identify with that right now. Some of you might be able to say, well, I can remember feeling like that. Some of you might say, well, I don't really know anything about this, but I would just encourage you to keep listening, because I guess one day you probably will, in one way or another. And Joseph has a lot to teach us, I think, in chapter 4, about how a believer can behave, or should behave, the blessings of behaving God's way in that sort of situation, when we're feeling trapped. He's got a lot to teach us about being faithful in the pit. Faithful when we feel trapped. And so I am specifically again this morning mainly speaking to Christians, people who are followers of God. Joseph was a God-fearer. He was a believer in God. And it's interesting to see how he behaved while he was in this prison. So first thing, they're all S's this morning. Serving in the pit, verse 4. Serving in the pit. It says, the captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them, and they continued for some time in custody. Perhaps the biggest danger that there is of feeling trapped in our lives is that feeling, we might call it a victim mentality, that we fall into this feeling of being the victim, and all our thoughts and all our focus is on ourselves, and we feel like having a pity party. And I think the encouragement of the scriptures and the encouragement of Joseph specifically is that we, in times like this, should continue to turn our minds towards others. In other words, that we should be serving God by serving others. We don't hear Joseph ranting about what his brothers do to him. He does mention it at one point, but he doesn't rant about it. He doesn't rant about what Mr. and Mrs. Potiphar did to him. He doesn't rant at God. He could do that, couldn't he? So, God, why have you got me here? And perhaps, the truth be known, he felt some of those things. I'm sure if he's human, he was human, I'm sure he must have felt some of that. But it turns out, the way God had planned things, God had brought him into this place. God had given him favour with the prison keeper. And it says, in fact, doesn't it, that if you're back to the previous chapter, 39:23, the keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. So the Lord had blessed Joseph in such a way that those who were supposed to be in charge of the prison were able to say to Joseph, you get on with it. And they could trust him, even though he was a prisoner. So, when the captain of the guard, interesting it calls him the captain of the guard, because that was actually the title of Potiphar. Strangely, it could be Potiphar, or perhaps another captain of the guard. It seems a bit strange that it's the captain of the guard in verse 3 and 4 of this verse. He's appointed Joseph to be with these two new prisoners. And these are high-ranking prisoners. To be a cupbearer and to be a baker for Pharaoh, like the king of all Egypt, they were very high officials. They were responsible for making sure what Pharaoh ate and drank wasn't just to his liking, but making sure that he didn't get poisoned. They were trusted people. I mean, these were people who had access to what Pharaoh drank and ate. So if there was someone that wanted to poison him or didn't like Pharaoh, Pharaoh had to know that he could trust these two men. And so these two have obviously displeased Pharaoh in some way. And as they come into the prison, we're told in verse 4 that Joseph attended them. And the word attended in the original means served or ministered. So Joseph had a ministry, attending them, serving them. So what I want to say to ourselves, say to me and say to you, is if you're feeling in a pit, if you're feeling at times low, you're trapped, resist the temptation to focus all your attention on yourself and look for opportunities to serve, to minister. Instead of focusing on yourself, focus on others. Ask yourself today, if you're in one of these situations, how can I focus my attention on someone else today? What could I do? How could I serve someone? What could I do to be kind to them? How could I care for them? How could I show God's goodness? How could I share what God has given me to others today? Who could you help? Who could you call and encourage today? Who could you meet up with? Who could you invite over for a meal? I know all the rules, but you know, perhaps there's something you could do to invite someone and just show that you care. What could you get involved with? What job could you do? What way could you help someone with a task? What thing could you do to serve at church? How could you help the local community? What ways can you turn your mind away from yourself and your pit to other people and turn your attention towards them? So when we're in the pit, we need to be faithful by serving others. That's the first thing. Secondly, sensitivity in the pit. And it's really, I guess, probably just a sub-point of the first one. Sensitivity in the pit, verses 6 to 7. It's interesting, isn't it? When these two guys have had a dream, Joseph comes down to them in the morning in verse 6, and he sees that they were troubled. And so he asks them, "Why are your faces downcast today?" Joseph had noticed, he's in prison himself, and he's noticed that these two prisoners, one particular morning, look downcast. I wonder sometimes if we get so self-absorbed with the thoughts of our own little pit that we don't see the pain and the trouble that other people are going through. Or perhaps if the honest truth is we see it, but we don't care, because our pit just seems so terrible. And I just want to encourage you this morning to ask the Lord, if you're feeling like that, to just soften your heart. Ask the Lord to help you to be sensitive to other people. even when you're in the pit yourself, and even when you've got legitimate things to be moaning about, I mean, Joseph could have legitimately moaned about the situation he was in, but he actually spent his time serving and being sensitive to those that are around him. So being faithful in the pit also means being sensitive to others. Thirdly then, speaking for God in the pit. Verse 8. So in verse 8, we've got the two officers from Pharaoh's household explaining their sadness. We've had these dreams and there's no one to interpret them. That's why they're sad. They've both had a dream on the same night, a bit strange, very vivid dreams, obviously, because they're able to repeat them. And they're feeling sad because they don't know how to find out what they mean. I suspect that they were used in Pharaoh's household to be around people who were like fortune tellers, were like wise go-to people in Egypt. But they had no one. They were in prison. The people that were in their mind that they would normally go to and say, I've had this dream, what does it mean? They weren't there. And that's why they're sad. Well, they thought that there was no one that could help, but Joseph comes, doesn't he? And he speaks up for God. Interesting, he doesn't speak for himself. He doesn't want to say, oh, I can interpret dreams. This is what he says. Do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell me your dreams. This is a servant of God saying to someone else, you know, only God really can answer what your problem is right now. Tell me all about it. So despite all that he's gone through, Joseph's quick to point these people to God when the opportunity arises. The cupbearer and the baker don't need fortune tellers. They need to hear from God. He's the one who holds the future. He doesn't just know about the future, he holds the future. And so I just want to encourage you, that if you're feeling in the pit, it's just as much a time to tell people about God as any other. And let's ask God to give us opportunities. Let's ask God to give us courage. Let's ask God to give us wisdom in the things that we say to others, that we would point them towards God. Being faithful in the pit means speaking for God. And lastly, I did an extra S in here just at the last minute. Surviving setbacks in the pit. Surviving setbacks in the pit. So Joseph listened to the cupbearer. He listened to his dream. Do you remember the dream? Three branches. It blossomed. The fruit grew really quickly. And then he was able to squeeze the grape juice into a cup, Pharaoh's cup, and he was able to give it to Pharaoh. And of course, the Lord gave Joseph the wisdom that he needed to know what this meant. And he said, well, that's going to be 3 days and you're going to be back. You're going to be restored. You're going to be handing the cup back to Pharaoh. You're going to be back where you were in 3 days' time. And he does say, doesn't he, as well, he asks him in verses 13 to 15, 14 and 15, please remember me. When you get back to Pharaoh in 3 days' time, just put a word in for me. I really want to get out of this. It wasn't my fault. I'm completely innocent. I shouldn't be here. Please remember me when you get put back in your position. And I mean, fancy that, being able to have a chat with someone who had such a powerful role right in the king's ear, was able to speak to Pharaoh and mention Joseph. We know later on he forgot, but that's what Joseph asked him to do. And so the baker, listening to this, you can imagine this story, can't you? The baker listens to what Joseph has said to the cupbearer, and he thinks, this sounds like a good dream. My dream's got three things in it. Perhaps it's the same sort of thing. So he said, interpret my dream. But his interpretation wasn't as good, was it? He was carrying three baskets of baked goods. You remember that the birds were snatching the baked goods out of the top one. And the interpretation from God that Joseph gave was that in 3 days' time, he was going to be killed, off with his head. And sure enough, these were interpretations from God because they came true. And the dreams were fulfilled just as he had said. The cupbearer was restored to his position and the baker was hanged. And then we get this horrible sort of sting in the tail in verse 23. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. What a disappointment. Here's Joseph doing his very best, doing all the things that you would want him to do if he was trying to be faithful to God in this situation. He's serving serving others in the prison. He's being sensitive to their needs. He's doing all that's required of him. And then there's this horrible setback. Speaking for God even. Thought there was light at the end of the tunnel. He could see it. He could imagine it in his mind perhaps. The cupbearer just whispering to Pharaoh. Putting a word in for him. Perhaps he was going to get out. Perhaps his hopes really arise. But he just completely forgot. And so there's disappointment. And there's delay. If you look down to chapter 41 and look at the first verse. It says, after 2 whole years. Now he's been down in Egypt for a good long time already, and so he's probably been in prison for a long time already, but there's another whole 2 years after this incident. We know it's a long time because if you it says after 2 whole years, and if you look ahead to 41:30, it says that when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, he was 30 years old. So at this point he's 28. You remember how old he was when he came? 17. So he's already been there 11 years and perhaps quite a lot of that time in prison. Imagine how he felt. The light had sort of dawned at the end of the tunnel. He thought perhaps this was the when he was going to get out. And then the guy just completely forgot about him. Perhaps you're in your pit, you're feeling the same. That it's just going on and on and on. Perhaps you're feeling that on top of the pit itself, there's more disappointments that have been thrown upon you. That the pain's been exacerbated by other things. Perhaps you've really trusted in someone and they've let you down, just like Joseph did here. Perhaps you've had a real cause to think that your little pit was coming to a little close. That things were going to move on, there was going to be a corner turn, the light was going to come. But you've come to see that it's all been dashed, your hopes are dashed. And all you can see is disappointment and delay, setback after setback. And what we see in Joseph is the man who continues to be faithful, continues to serve. And we find in the next chapter him being used by God mightily again. We know, of course, what's going to happen. We know what's going to happen to Joseph, how he was going to be the second most important person in Egypt. He's going to be Pharaoh's right-hand man, but Joseph doesn't know any of that at the moment. All he can see is disappointment and delay and darkness and the pit that he's in. But he's trusting God. And so being faithful in the pit means trusting him through the setbacks, trusting him through the disappointments and through the delays. So as we close, I just want to sort of look at the account in a bit of a different way. So far, we've been putting ourselves in Joseph's position, haven't we? We've been learning from his faithfulness. Spending time when we're feeling like this, feeling trapped or in a pit, that we serve others. We want to be sensitive to others. We want to be speaking for God. And we want to survive those setbacks by trusting in God. But I just want to show you that Joseph is a type, and in so many ways he's a type or a picture, we might say, of Jesus himself. That he was a type of Jesus who also was a great pit dweller, you might say. See, Jesus left the glories of heaven and came down entirely voluntarily and innocently to come and dwell in the sinful pit that we had made of this world. He came as God eternal, but he came as the one who came to seek and save the lost. In fact, he came to serve. He didn't come to lord it over us, but to serve us. He came as the author of life, but he was sensitive to the needs of his people. Think of the way that Jesus lived, the way that he walked around, the stories that you know of the people that he interacted with. Think of those people who had suffered for many years, who came to him for help, and he stopped everything he was doing. At the time when he would go off to try and be on his own, and then he would get harangued by all those people that wanted help, and how generous he was with his time, how sensitive he was to the needs of the people around him. The way that he came to speak for God. He came to proclaim. He came to announce the kingdom. He came to establish the kingdom. He came to speak the truth to his people. So we're seeing all these things. Like Joseph, we're seeing him serving. We're seeing him being sensitive. We see him speaking. We see him surviving what we might call setbacks. It's hard. It's just the wrong words to use for what Jesus did, isn't it? But think about the challenges that he endured, the frustrations he had with his disciples. Think of the so-called religious men of the time who were trying to correct him all the time. Think of the people that towards the end were trying to kill him. And then think of what he actually did as he was put on the cross and under trial and then put on the cross. You see, Joseph's life is an example to us, but really all he's doing is pointing us to the way that Jesus lived. So as we follow the example of Joseph, we're following the example of Jesus. We want to be more and more like him, don't we? As his followers, he calls us to be like him. And so let's think of this little prison that Joseph's in. But let's think too about the great work of Christ as he serves, as he's sensitive to our needs, as he speaks for God, and as he survives the setbacks, the challenges that he faces. Let's pray together and ask God to help us through these times that sometimes come when we feel like we're in a pit.